got a sprain or an itch, pain, rash, swelling, or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Over 10 years ago, I was appointed to the examining committee of the 4th Judicial Circuit Court of Florida. We help determine whether someone is incapacitated and needs to have a guardian under either a full or partial guardianship. And I have found that many people who are seeking guardianship for a family member, for whatever reason, often do not understand either the implications of a guardianship on the person who is alleged to be incapacitated or them as guardians. As a matter of fact, I have had many patients who have questioned me concerning guardianships and how and when they should request one, oftentimes for a loved one, family, or even friend who they feel needs to be under a guardianship. So Carmen and I are going to try and give you a quick understanding of when it becomes necessary to go that next step beyond a durable power of attorney onto a guardianship. So first, a few definitions.
A power of attorney, or POA, simply authorizes someone else to handle certain matters, such as finances or health care, on your behalf. If a power of attorney is durable, it remains in effect, even if you become incapacitated, such as due to illness or an accident.
So, a durable power of attorney helps you plan for medical emergencies and declines in mental functioning and can ensure that your finances are taken care of. It helps eliminate confusion and uncertainty when family members have to make tough medical decisions on your behalf. And that is because a simple power of attorney expires if you become mentally incompetent, while a durable power of attorney includes special wording that makes it effective even if that happens.
The person you appoint is known as your agent or attorney in fact. Remember that the person you appoint does not have to be a lawyer.
An attorney, in fact, can handle many types of transactions, including buying and selling property, managing bank accounts, bills, and investments, filing tax returns, and applying for government benefits.
If you become incapacitated and don't have a general durable power of attorney, your family may have to go to court and have you declared incompetent before they can take care of your finances for you.
So it's a good idea to have a durable power of attorney, just in case. Now, you may think that this sounds similar to an advanced directive or living will, which details the treatment you want if you are at the end of your life and can no longer communicate.
A healthcare power of attorney, on the other hand, names someone to make medical decisions anytime you are unable to do it yourself, even if you are expected to make a full recovery.
In some cases, though, a durable power of attorney is not enough, and a guardianship may be recommended.
There are two legal tools that empower a third party, meaning a person other than ourselves, to manage our financial, medical, or personal needs.
These two tools are the power of attorney and the guardianship. Although they both achieve the same purpose, they have very important differences. Remember that with a power of attorney, the individual, such as your mom or dad, for example, would choose the person or persons in charge of their financial and or medical decisions. These documents will clearly state who will make those decisions on their behalf.
They can even assign more than one person to share that role, and there are usually two or more alternate names in case the first or second choice is unable or unwilling to serve in this role.
And the roles can be divided among them, such that one person is given the decision-making for financial and another is given the medical decisions. One prerequisite, allowing someone to sign a power of attorney, giving you the controls inherent in the document, are that they are of sound mind, with the full mental ability to understand the powers that they are transferring. But let's compare that to a guardianship.
With a guardianship, the courts choose the decision maker when it has been demonstrated that an individual, again such as your mom or dad, is no longer mentally able to make decisions in his or her best interest.
Typically, a family member would petition the court to appoint a person to serve as guardian. But it does not have to be a family member who requests it. Occasionally, it is a hospital or healthcare worker, such as someone who works in a nursing home, who requests the guardianship. To do this, the court first would require certain documents.
It is then up to the courts to decide whether the person is in need of a guardianship.
This is where the examining committee that I am a member of comes in. We help the court to make that decision. If that has been established to the court's satisfaction, the judge considers who will be the third party to be appointed as guardian. Now, when I was young, umpteen years ago, and it came to summer vacation, I was one of many teenagers and young adults as well, as really most older adults, who started slathering on those oils to literally cook our skin to get that perfect tan on the beach. If only we had known then what we know now, we might not have been so gung-ho to perform that summer ritual. We all know now
that sun exposure
increases our risks of skin cancer, don't we? Well, maybe not.
A new study says that about 1/3 of all Americans don't know that tanning can cause skin cancer, and yet tanning salons are still a thriving business.
But wearing sunscreen, protective clothing, and performing regular skin self-exams can all help lower your risk of skin cancer. Yes, it can, but there are many caveats to that.
It is important to remember that skin cancer is the most common cancer in the United States, affecting 1 in 5 Americans by age 70, according to the Skin Cancer Foundation.
Over half the population are simply unaware that shade will protect them from the sun's harmful UV rays, and almost 1/2 incorrectly believe that having a base tan will actually prevent sunburns.
1/3 of all Americans either incorrectly believe or are untrue that as long as you don't burn, tanning is safe. I want to reiterate this. Tanning is not safe.
31% are unaware that tanning causes skin cancer. And due to social distancing and people staying out of work more, there will be more people spending time out of the house, perhaps spending a good part of that time in the sun. Now, there are many misconceptions, but you need to know that everyone is at risk of skin cancer, regardless of age, gender, or race.
And tanning, whether it be indoors or outdoors, can be extremely detrimental to patients and lead to skin cancer, as well as premature wrinkles, age spots, and more.
Remember that using tanning beds before the age of 35 can increase your chances of developing melanoma. That's a particularly virulent or dangerous type of cancer, and that increases by 60%. And here's something to think about. The risk continues to increase with each use of a tanning bed.
So if you insist on spending time in the sun, then we all recommend you look for shade whenever possible.
You should know that the worst time to be out in the sun is when the sun's rays are the strongest. And that is between the hours of approximately 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Now we all know that shade is not always possible. Maybe you are at the beach and maybe you did not bring that umbrella, so there are still things that you can do to lessen the risk.
First, bring the right kind of sunscreen. Am I talking SPF? Is that what you're thinking? Well, partly. But most of us really did not get a good education on just what SPF ratings really mean?
First question, answer yes or no. Does an SPF 30 sunscreen offer twice as much protection as an SPF 15 sunscreen?
Well, if you answered yes, then you are one of the majority, or 85% of people, who are incorrect. And 55% either incorrectly believe or are unsure if high SPF sunscreens can be applied less frequently than low SPF sunscreens.
Generally, it is best to apply a broad-spectrum, water-resistant sunscreen with an SPF of 30 or higher to all skin that is not covered by clothing and reapplying every 2 hours or after swimming or sweating.
First of all, the best sunscreen is the one you will use and reapply and reapply. Your sunscreen should contain zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, oxybenzone, avobenzone, acamsule, or octocrylene. Now, I mentioned the term broad-spectrum sunscreen, so Carmen is going to tell us how that differs from regular sunscreen.
First, we really need to explain that there are two types of UV light that can harm your skin, UVA and UVB, so a broad-spectrum sunscreen protects you from both.
UV rays can prematurely age your skin, causing wrinkling and age spots. UVB rays can burn your skin. Too much exposure to UVA or UVB rays can cause skin cancer.
Remember that SPF stands for sun protection factor. This is simply a measure of how well sunscreen protects against UVB rays.
UVA protection isn't rated, so that is one reason you have to look for a sunscreen that does cover both UVA and UVB.
Manufacturers calculate SPF based on how long it takes to sunburn skin treated with a sunscreen as compared to skin with no sunscreen.
Experts recommend using a sunscreen with an SPF of at least 30. Sunscreens with SPFs greater than 50 provide only a small increase in UV protection. Now, here's a really important point. High number SPFs last the same amount of time as low number SPFs. You have to reapply according to the directions of the sunscreen.
And they never really tell you just how much you should apply. So here is some advice geared towards that. Before we get to the amount, let me say that you should start to apply sunscreen about 15 minutes before you go outside.
Make sure that you understand just what Carmen said. Do not apply the sunscreen as you get to the beach or outside, but 15 minutes before going outside into the sun. If you're using a sunscreen lotion formula, you'll need about a golf ball-sized amount, which is about 1 ounce to cover your whole body.
The idea is really to slather it on and rub it in until you don't see any more lotion left. I know that this could appear more costly.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We are located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain management specialist. Our medical practice emphasizes pain management as well as family medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
So now let's get back to our discussion of sunscreen. A tube of 5 or so ounces will only give coverage to around 5 people once during the day. And don't forget your neck, ears, and the tops of your hands and feet. The neck is one very visible area that can show signs of premature aging first. Ears, hands, and feet sadly don't get enough attention, but are definitely prone to sunburn.
For your face, you might think of using a sunscreen made specifically for that face. You can use about a nickel-sized amount every day, even when it is cloudy.
And don't forget your lips. There are sunscreen lip balms, and these should be reapplied regularly.
And here is a very important point. You should reapply every 2 hours.
That's right. Every 2 hours.
So, if you are going to go to the beach and stay in the sun for 6 hours, you will probably use up to 2 dirt to 1 entire tube of lotion in the day just for yourself.
Now, remember when we talked about water-resistant sunscreen? You see, I did not say waterproof. I said water resistant, that you can reapply every 40 to 80 minutes.
You should reapply sunscreen immediately after you take a dip in the pool or catch some waves on your surfboard or any other water activity, of course.
The term water resistant means that the SPF is maintained for up to 40 minutes in water. Very water resistant means the SPF is maintained for 80 minutes in water. At the beginning of the discussion, we mentioned various ingredients that should be in sunscreens. These are the filters that reflect or absorb UV rays. There are 2 main types of filters, organic and inorganic.
The organic filters absorb UV radiation and convert it to a small amount of heat. These include cinnamates, salicylates, and benzophenones.
Inorganic filters, on the other hand, reflect and scatter UV radiation. Titanium dioxide and zinc oxide are examples of these, but there may be other ingredients.
Some contain insect repellent, but the experts recommend using separate sunscreen and insect repellent products.
This is because sunscreens need to be applied generously and often, while insect repellent should be used sparingly and less frequently.
Some contain moisturizers, makeup, and aftershaves. These may seem super convenient, but again, these do not need to be applied as often as the sunscreen.
Well, how about choosing between a spray, lotion, cream, gel, or stick? If you have dry skin, you might prefer a cream, especially on your face.
And lotions are preferred for application on large areas. They also generally are thinner and less greasy than creams.
Gels work best in hairy areas, such as the scalp or chest. Sticks are useful when applying sunscreen around the eyes.
Now, sprays, they are easy to apply on children. It is suggested that you apply a lot and get an even coating, as it is really difficult to know how well you are applying it.
Since we do not want the spray inhaled, we suggest that you do not use this near the face or the mouth. To prevent inhalation of the product, don't spray near the face or mouth. That's important. And here's a good tip. Check wind direction before spraying. If you spray into the wind, you will most likely be wasting a lot of the product. A lot of people believe that you do not need sunscreen in cloudy weather. But unfortunately, UV light can pass through the clouds.
It is important to check the sunscreen's expiration date. Many of us keep a bottle after the season ends and try to start using it at next warm or summer season.
So look at the expiration date before using. Avoid using sunscreen on children younger than age 6 months. Instead, try to limit sun exposure. And just as we said previously, you might want to use sunscreen year-round. But do not forget all of the other things that help prevent skin cancer, such as wearing sun-protective clothing, particularly lightweight long-sleeved shirts and pants, a wide-brimmed hat, and sunglasses with UV protection.
Do you know that there is now clothing available that contains an ultraviolet protection factor called a UPF label?
But it is not just the UPF factor that is important in the clothing material. It's also the thickness and weave that can affect the penetration of the UV light to the skin, with the thick and higher woven clothing offering more protection.
Now, one of the most virulent forms of skin cancer is the melanoma. You have heard of the ABCs? Well, here you need to look out for the following ABCDEs, which are the warning signs of melanoma.
So I'm going a bit off topic of sunscreens just to tell you the warning signs of melanoma.
A is for asymmetry. One half of the spot is unlike the other half.
B is for border. The spot has an irregular scalloped or poorly defined border.
C is for color. The spot has varying colors from one area to the next, such as shades of tan, brown, or black, or areas of white, red, or blue.
D is for diameter. While melanomas are usually greater than 6 millimeters, or about the size of a pencil eraser, when diagnosed, they can be smaller.
E is for evolving. The spot looks different from the rest or is changing in size, shape, or color.
So to sum up, it's a changing skin lesion larger than a pencil eraser with irregular borders and irregular shape with various colors within the lesion itself. Now, you can also get something called a body mole map performed at your dermatologist's office. About 28 or so pictures will be taken of your skin so that any lesions can be compared later on.
If you cannot get to your dermatologist or simply do not want to see one, then there are several smartphone applications that can do a basic type of mole map in the privacy of your own home.
We are not recommending these as a substitute for a true mole map. We are just mentioning that they do exist. You should perform a self-exam every other month and ask someone you live with to look at areas you can't readily see.
If you do opt to take your own, make sure that you follow guidelines such as take the pictures of each area at the same distance and in the same lighting so that you can compare one set of pictures with similar ones taken previously.
For the final few minutes of the show, I'd like to go over some of the questions that many of our patients have been asking concerning the recommendation for medical marijuana in the state of Florida.
In 2016, a constitutional amendment was passed by a landslide with 71% of voters to permit the use of medical marijuana in Florida by patients suffering from a list of serious medical conditions.
Over 500,000 active medical marijuana cards have been issued, and over 2,500 doctors in Florida are certified to recommend. And I am proud that I was one of the first physicians to receive the certification to recommend medical marijuana right here in Florida. Things were pretty much at a standstill as far as changes to the regulations until Senate Bill 182 passed, amending the medical marijuana program. It allowed physicians who have been certified to recommend medical marijuana to add smoked flower to their armamentarium. Until that time, physicians could only recommend oral, local, inhalable, and suppositories to their patients.
And then edibles were added as well. One of the reasons that this was delayed for so long is possibly the fact that it must be approved as a food as well.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.